What up, y'all? Level 20, episode 19, Zigzag. I am your host, Connor Smith, level 1 summer intern. As always, we got Josh Berman and Friedel Cody, and this week we're talking with Chris Logan and Parker White. Super stoked to share that interview with you. Make sure you go watch the movie ASAP, because you only got 1 week to watch Zigzag for free. Otherwise, you're going to be paying for it. So go check it out, www.podcast.level1.ski, to find the video. I'm not going to spit out all those tour stops at you this week. By now, you know we got a shit ton all over the place. Go to the events page on the website, level1.ski. Go find a romance showing near you. The digital release of Romance is in 2 days, Tuesday, November 5th, on all platforms you could possibly consider watching this on. So go check it out. Go find a place to watch it. Find some buddies and have a movie night. That's all I'm going to give you this week. You know what else is going on. Go check out the store. Go check out the events page. Here is Parker White and Chris Logan. Enjoy, everybody.
We just had an awesome Whitefish premiere. Thank you, Whitefish, for everyone coming out. That was so much fun.
Yeah, I heard that went off.
It did. It was fucking really sick. Packed the house, sold out building, and then Buddy had to let in another 100 people because the line was out the door.
Oh, yep.
Damn.
It was good shit. And then we just been raging for the past couple of days afterwards.
No doubt. T Hall said we raised collectively $6,000 for all the kitties.
We did.
That's sick.
Yep. Whitefish ski and snowboard team made over $6,000.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was really sick, man.
Let the children ski.
Yeah,
and snowboard. I had a shirt off by like 7:15 doing raffles. It was goddamn amazing.
Why not?
Yeah. I was upset. I was supposed to wear a shirt in the first place, to be completely honest.
It's hot in there.
Yeah.
So you guys both still in Whitefish now? Where are you at?
I'm in Whitefish still.
Yeah, I'm in Bellingham Days Inn.
Why?
I'm specifically in the bathroom of the Bellingham Days Inn. This is my office because the Hawk is doing some schoolwork. So,
you ever see Poncho and Lefty? He's on the run.
No, I just got all my stuff moved into the Baker House today.
You did. So yeah, why are you in the hotel?
Yeah, I don't get it.
I'm not supposed to move in till the 1st, so.
Oh, true.
Yeah, they just let me move some stuff in early.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, that's pretty nice.
Losing money. Deals at the Day's End.
I am losing money being here. Every day. I'm also losing money every day. I keep that U-Haul in my possession. It's supposed to have been returned.
God. I was gonna say, who's counting, but they are clearly.
Yeah.
Yes, they are. So very intently.
So Parker, are you living at Baker this year then?
Yeah, it's kind of a Royal Tenenbaum situation where the Days Inn just has me as a permanent residence here now. in exchange for custodial work and things like that.
And you have a deal. You have all your like fucking like disconnected children come visit you.
Yeah, yeah.
As you pretend to be dying to get attention.
Yeah, exactly. But they all live in Kendall or something.
Yeah.
I just got a place just for the winter in Baker, so it's pretty dope.
Hell yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, it should be sick.
Is your spot in Bellingham or is it in Glacier, Parker, or where?
No, it's in Glacier.
There you go.
Yeah, in the rim there.
Glacier's rad.
Yeah, that's dope, dude. I'm hyped.
Well, there's some heavy Baker presence in Zigzag to be discussed, but let's not get too ahead of ourselves there, because first, I'd just like to understand, like, obviously you guys did your thing with the big picture for a while, and what, like, where did the impetus come to come back to Level 1 and film more with these dudes?
Eric, you want to take this one?
I think sort of towards the end of our last you're shooting with big pick stuff. You guys had that mammoth shoot going on, and I know Parker linked up for that and had already kind of was talking about wanting to come back and film a seg and travel around with Friedel. I think I was a little bit slower to the program. I didn't really get started until last year in like middle of February. You guys had hired Sean on, and I was kicking it with Tinky and Ahmed a little bit, and they were talking about linking up and doing some stuff. So that's when I kind of had hit Berman up and kind of just seeing what the program was and if he had some room and the come back fit. And do some filming. Yeah. And that's kind of when I got on and started swinging from there.
Dope.
Yeah. And for me, it was like, we just kind of knew that the big pick was done. And Light Years came out like super well, actually.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it did.
We also had like all of our footage was sort of spread out through the whole year through a bunch of segments. And I had like a major fire under my ass that I really wanted to film just a powerhouse, like 3-minute segment with all my footage in one place. Mm. And having like done our own smaller web series, I think I had it in me a bit too, that I really wanted to get back on like a big screen kind of and just do that whole thing again. And we'd been away from Level One long enough that it kind of felt like brand new again, you know?
For sure.
Yeah, it's kind of like, oh, this is like this brand new project that I get to do this year, but also it's just with all the old familiar faces. So I was like, yeah, yes. Let's go. Let's get her. Let's stay.
Let's fucking stay.
Let's stay, man. Stay at Level One, actually.
Sick going places. I definitely felt new. Felt new on my end, too. I think on our end as well.
Absolutely. I think it lit up fire under everybody's ass collectively, from Friedel to myself, and it was a vibe that was kind of picked up all across the crew. In fact, I remember Friedel mentioned to me when we were in Mammoth, I think it was like maybe a couple days into you shooting with us, Parker, and I was so hyped to just have you back hanging out with us, because that was just really good vibes and I really enjoyed it. But I remember we were going out to dinner. you're welcome, son. And I can keep a closer eye on you and help keep you out of trouble. So, I mean, served a lot of purposes.
Take you to soccer practice.
But I remember we were going out to dinner, and Friedel was like, hey, man, you know, I don't want to, like, jump the gun here, but, you know, I think, you know, Parker and I have been chatting, and I think Parker's going to come back, you know, full time next year. And I lit up like a fucking Christmas tree. I was like, yeah, man, that is the coolest news. And I was just very, very excited. And it was just a kick in the ass and a inspiration, if you will, that I think just gave us all a little jolt that we really wanted and needed going into that season. And I think,
thanks, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think that it was in a lot of ways symbolic, man, because to have you make the call to, like, if you know, for lack of a better way to say it, you know, trust us with what you're doing. You know, I just thought that it spoke to a number of people in the crew that, all right, like, you know, this is it. Like, we're all going to go all in. We're all going to put a lot of time and energy and like, oh, Parker's on this shit. So, yeah, I think it really meant a lot to a number of people.
Yeah, totally. It was all good. And I always obviously have full trust in everything you guys were doing. So I was like, oh yeah, I'll go back with these guys. It'll be good. We'll make something happen.
Mm. So, I mean, the history of you two together is very well documented, from Vermont to Mammoth, like, and then with the big pick, filming for Level One old days. But this movie, you guys spent the whole season not with each other at all. Like, no link ups. What? Why? Yeah.
I don't think that was even really intentional.
No.
I think because you had even, like, Darkness had even invited me to go to Whitefish, or like Montana, but there's already a bunch of other crews there, and Baker was getting like a huge storm. And I was in Europe before that, just kind of randomly with Sammy and Laurent. But he invited me to link up, and I was like, ah, dude, there's already got a big crew, and I kind of want to go shred Baker. And then after Baker, I just did like one heli trip and then Kimbo sessions, and that was it. And you didn't go on the heli trip for Kimbo, so it wasn't really on purpose. Yeah. We just kind of like missed each other all year.
Yeah, I think I had moved up here and got in like right around December, and it just started snowing a ton, and it was really sick because I didn't know the area. Like, had the thought in mind, like, it'd be cool to learn this lay of the land, and it was a really good winter, so I didn't really have to go too far. And then, yeah, it was just like he was doing something else. There were a bunch of random crews, like, even before we started filming, that came up. Like, McChesney was hanging out up around here, Thane, and then we kind of just, like, yeah, we had our crew going, and, you know, you kind of max out, right? You don't want to get too many people going, then it's less productive. And so that was, kind of the first year in a long time that we didn't really shred together.
Were we kicking it in Whistler that year? Or were you not? Because I was hanging with Sean.
No.
I don't think that you were even there.
Because Chris had left for a wedding in Italy or something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, I have a little perspective on this. I think, so obviously, like, Parker, you and I had been living together for 5 years at that point. So this was, like, a long time coming when you jumped back in the fold. It was very much, like, I don't know. I was just talking about this with Tatum, but, like, I really, outside of just being a filmer, really like to, like, have, I don't know, work intimately on, like, with somebody towards one thing. And I think that you and I working together was a long time, or we were fully committed to that, like, singular vision there. So, and I think that you guys departing from the big picture, there was a lot of benefit, and at least how I saw it, to, like, try new shit, because you had been working so intimately with each other for the last 5 years, and well before that too. That, like, I was like Chris, when you started filming with Thane, I was like, dude, this is a match made in heaven. Like, those guys, like a whole different scene. Like, you know, Thane was used to Utah boys, and you had just been shooting with Sean and Parker, Parker and I started off the season in Switzerland with Sammy Ortlieb and Laurent, and that was like a whole different tip for Parker. I think he was like, damn, like, it was just kind of a different program. And it just sort of continued that way. Yeah, not super intentionally, but, like, I think it kind of just benefited from just like you get, like, as a filmer, I get, like, inspired by different fucking landscapes or different people, like, for sure. So that's, I feel like, the same way with cruise and skiing is, like, if you 100%. Just shake it up, like, big time 1 year, like, you're going to have it's not going to feel like fucking Groundhog Day.
Yeah, totally.
Definitely.
And I mean, I feel like it worked. Yeah. Really nicely. But it was weird, 'cause I remember, like, chilling with, I think it was in Baker with you, Parker. And he was like, we were sharing clips because we had shot some shit that we were hyped on. Berman had just shot Dark doing the big, like, switch misty nine tail. And we were like, oh, shit. And it was really, I think, really rad for you guys to see each other ski, but, like,
not be there.
Yeah, like, it was just, like, different programs. But also, you're like, damn, dude, this is crazy. Like, I haven't like, not skied with Dark, and I can't even remember when.
Yeah, totally. Let alone, like, not been there when he got a clip. Like, usually I'll have, like, a whole journal of, like, every shot that I got, but then every shot that Chris got too. Right. And I'm like, do we have enough footage for a big picture movie? Like, I don't think we do. We're throwing in a crash segment. But yeah, for sure. Yeah, that was funny, and it was a funny start to the year too, dude, because, like, Europe was awful. Like, we were in Europe for a long, well, not, I don't want to say awful. We had a We had a lot of fun.
We had everything because it was also really sick. You just kind of forget those days. They were washed out by rain. But
as far as like the segment, I mean, you and I were there for 3 weeks or more, and I got one clip that whole trip in like three plus weeks.
And a street clip that has a cameo in Sammy's segment, pipe shot.
Yeah.
First street clip in a minute.
Yeah, I got one and a half clips.
Yeah, for the record, Parker has an uncredited cameo. So if you know, you know. But he obviously probably, I set it up so that most people would know that that was you. But you're doing a switch lip on a large water pipe.
Mm-hmm.
You're the one that's not posties. Sammy in Sammy's part.
Yeah. I forget what we're talking about now.
What was the one clip you got?
It was a zero spin.
The switch tapper.
A switch straight air.
A switch straight air. Backwards to backwards.
Which is a really nice shot.
Yeah.
Parker, I just want to, speaking of zero spins, I just want to jump back. We were just talking about the mammoth jump. What was your impressions of that? I just want to get that out of the way real quick.
About the habit.
We were just talking about, we just did this habit thing, and we were, you know, talking about that session, and like you kind of came back as this like kind of veteran in a lot of ways and sort of ran that show. I think unlocked that whole session in a lot of ways for that crew.
What was my impression of it?
That fucking jump. I just want to get the first hand because we talked about filming and missing the shot and the zero and stuff like that. But
I was fired up, dude, because I had already thought about coming and like I was like, man, let me do another number one seg or something. And I mean, that's just like those massive jumps you used to hit back in the day, you know?
Yeah.
And I was in Mammoth where we used to live and do everything. So I was just like right at home and I was like, oh buddy, like let's do it. You know, that jump was so sick. But the reason you guys missed that clip, I was getting frustrated, with Johnny because every time he brought the drone down, he was like, okay, no one ski. And then everyone would like stop skiing. But when you're hitting a jump that big, dude, like, you got to get in that rhythm and that flow, and you're not trying to like sit around and get cold. You know what I mean?
No, you don't want to be on ice.
Every run, you don't want to be on ice, and speed and everything changes. And I remember the drone kept going down, and I was just like, "Oh my god, dude! Like, fuck this! Like, I'm just hitting this. I don't care anymore. You can just film it or not film it.
I got your shot." Like,
yeah, I was really getting like super impatient. I was like, "Whatever, dude. I'm just gonna zero spin this right now. I don't care if there's any cameras." and I did that one like to the bottom that no one filmed, and I was like, "Yeah, whatever." And I think I did another one too, but it wasn't as good.
It wasn't as.
But I was like, dude, because. And I don't mean to like harsh Johnny, but everyone should have just kept sessioning and doing everything and then just pop in and film whenever you can. But it didn't make sense for everyone to stop skiing. And I remember getting really frustrated at that.
Well, there was just so much pressure on him, right? To like get that aerial shot or whatever. Yeah. But we got to get
every shot. But at the same time, it's like everyone gets less shots.
It's a balance,
man. Stopping, whatever.
I think you were that one was for the boys. That's a big one for the boys.
Went to warm on them.
Straight up.
Speaking of jump sessions, I'm going further off topic here, but Darkness, what was the scariest guinea out of all the guineas you did at level one park shoots throughout the days? I'm curious, which one was the gnarliest to sack up to?
Probably the first one, that Sun Valley jump.
Mm.
Because I don't even know if I had health insurance at the time.
Probably not.
You didn't. You definitely didn't.
I don't think I did. and from that point on, that was the last time I ever, I think, straight aired a guinea, and I fucking hated it. From there on out, I would always just like cork sev or rodeo seven, so I didn't have to just stare at the landing the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, fuck yeah. And that was like, you know, first time out, like, all right, here you go. Jimbo Morgan always says, like, only got one chance to make a first impression. So it was like, fucking fired up. Let's do it. But no, that one took a couple of speed checks.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that was a big jump.
Where? Dude, that was one thing that was really hard for me filming that zigzag segment, is that you weren't there to guinea things. I'm serious, dude. I remember hitting things and just being like, oh, I really wish Chris was here to hit this first.
There was one thing, and I forget which hit it was, but you're like, you know what? I've really gotten accustomed to darkness doing this first, and we don't even talk about it. You're like, it's not even discussed. We're not Rochambeauing for any of this shit. He just
I'll like occasionally throw it out. Like, are we rock paper scissors for it? He'll just look at me and be like, shut up. What? Like, why would we do that? We know how this is going down.
There's an understanding.
Yeah. Come on, Chris. You. We all know what's happening right now. Like, okay.
It's pretty funny. Like that year, then, you know, like not shredding together, and for the first time, like shredding with Thane, shredding with Laurent, and just like a new crew. You like go to hit a jump, and people are like, all right, well, who's going first? It's like, well, usually I do, but if you want it, like, I've had it, man. I've done this enough times, but so yeah, that was a little different too.
Yeah, word.
Shuffle the deck.
That's gotta be.
Yeah.
What's your take on skiing with Thane? We've been talking about his style and what it's like to. I mean, he's got some of that, like.
Je ne sais quoi.
Yeah, I can't pronounce that, but he's got the flair.
Dude, Thane's crazy.
Yeah.
He's nuts, man. Like, I had known him for a bit, and we did this Tahoe. What was that? The Seven Sisters, Parker? That contest with him? I can't remember.
Something I'm brain farting on.
Yeah, it was a Kirkwood comp.
The Kirkwood, yeah. So that was the first time I'd ever seen him ski, and was like, who the fuck is this kid? Like, he is charging right now. And then I had obviously seen him ski and like was buddies with him, but had never like skied with him. And then he just like fucking sends and just like snipes micro trannies and all this shit. I'm like, what? Like, no thanks, man. That's all you. I'll sit down here and cheer you on, watch you. But dude, he's the man. Bolt just hanging out, shredding with him. The dude lands switch like, better than anybody else I know. Like, yeah. He's good shit. Love Thaner.
Kinky.
Somebody want to explain that?
I don't know.
I don't even know how that came up. That's Thane's nickname. That was Tinky.
Oh, it's Tinky. Isn't it Tinky Winky from the Teletubbies because he's always skiing with a GoPro on his helmet?
Oh, it might have been. That might have
been. Yeah. You guys think it's something real bad.
No. It's just kind of like not an easy answer, right? But then there's also like this pronunciation thing to it as well, because his dog, he has this little pug called Ziggy, and the way he pronounces Ziggy is like Ziggy. It's like, hey, Zig, hey, Ziggy. So it's like, Tinky is like, Tinky. Hey, Tinky.
Yeah. I always thought that was like a party alter ego. I did not know that.
Hey, maybe. No. These all could be independently true at the same time.
It works for that as well.
Yeah.
D, all of the above.
Yeah, after two dozen White Claws, he turns into Tinky.
Nudes. Where are either you guys there this year for Romance when he did the jumbo pow surf cliff drop?
Oh, that's yeah. I talked him into it. I was gonna say that's that's all dark.
Damn.
And it didn't take much talking. He was down.
Oh, so a little bit of background there. That's when we went up to Revelstoke early January, and on day one, I think what did he like bruise his heel or tweak his ankle or something like that.
Yeah, he was having a rough go up there.
Yeah, but it was like ankle, and then it was lower back, and so he'd come out and sled and just like chill and drink nudes every day, but there wasn't a lot of skiing going on, and he was just fiending to like get some air under him. In one of the last few days, he's like, I'm just gonna like no board off this. Actually, he started off on a little cliff, and then the one that he sends in the movie, that was for. That was the winner.
Yeah.
Dude, I remember Friedel and I, I don't know if you sent us that clip or if we saw it on the
gram. No, we saw it on the gram in Japan.
Instagram.
Yeah, Friedel, you showed me that and you're like, dude, this is borderline, like, not cool.
Well,
you're like, is Tinky, like, out of it, like, out of his mind? Like, did he go insane? And I was like, dude, I don't know. That's really gnarly, though, because not knowing where that crowd surf is going to land and then, like, just jumping off that big of a... I've hit that cliff on ski, and it's big, dude. It's probably like a 40 foot cliff or something.
At least.
Dude, yeah. Not having anything on your feet, I've never done that, but like, I don't know how far you torpedo through the snow or anything. I just watched that and I was like, that was crazy as shit. I was like, I can't.
Dark. I remember.
That's actually really gnarly, man.
He was going up for that. And I remember, like, I think it was you that I was talking to. I was like, I basically asked, like, is this safe? Like, should I, like, put my foot down on this? Is this going to be one of the very, very rare occasions when I try to, like, stop something from happening? And you're just like, no, it's all good.
Yeah. Dude, if buddy wants to go do something, let him have at her. Yeah, he was like, yeah, the one before, it took more talking into for like a smaller cliff.
Yeah.
And then he finally like sent it, but he went over like ski tracks. And so he like slipped out and was just like laughing, tumbled over the top. And then was like, dude, you should go hit that thing. He's like, yeah, you think? I was like, yeah, I think you got it for sure. He's like, all right, yeah, for sure. Let's go. Like, I didn't think you were going to say yes to that, but hell yeah, man. I'll give you a ride up.
I was kidding, man, but all right. Let's see where this party train takes us.
Yeah. Word up. All right, well, back to Zigzag. Should we talk about the Baker stuff? Let's talk about that.
Some good stories from Baker.
I'd imagine. What time of year were you there in Baker when that trip happened?
We went there in late February of 2018. Chris and Parker had been there with Sean for Big Pick in the December of the following year. And obviously Baker, when it's on, is super good. When it's off, it's super bad. But it can be when it's on, it's the best place. Fucking lift access in the lower 48 or whatever to ski. And I think that was on our hit list for at least P and I to go back and revisit there. Mm-hmm. And we just saw, we were in Bozeman. We had come off this kind of, not shot wise productive trip in Switzerland. And right. We were really keen on,
Stacking
while winter still existed. So we kind of boogied out there to Glacier ahead of this storm system because it had been pretty icy there, and got probably like close to 2 weeks of the best conditions that you can get at Baker.
Stars aligned.
Yeah, it was like one time though where the like locals are like, oh, you guys are here for the best 2 weeks of the season. You know, usually it's like, should have been here last week or whatever. And I was like, oh, you guys were here like 2 days before it started. And then, so it was awesome. Yeah.
Nailed
it's
it.
It's so rare, though, that like it didn't get above freezing for our entire trip. And it was over 2 weeks. I remember just being like, this is crazy. Yeah. And it didn't, not only did it not get above freezing, but it snowed every day, and a lot of those shots from there I went back and got second try. Like I'd go try something and be like and like not get it, and then it would just reset. We'd go back two laters and I knew exactly how to hit it and how to do everything. And that happened on like a few hits from that trip where we would just go re-hit everything a couple days after. You get like your practice session in and then you'd go back and get like your actual film clips, you know.
That's because you didn't have Dark there to guinea shit for you.
Yeah, so I had to do full practice sessions on everything.
Secrets out.
But that was also like the first time I think that was just you and I as like a little guerrilla unit, and that was just, it just felt right, like getting into it that way for that period of time. It was like, all right, this is like where we're gonna make hay while the sun is not shining.
Yeah, totally. And it was, that was weird but dope in itself too, because I've never really not, I was just filming by myself. I was hitting all that shit and just doing everything pretty much solo.
Except for the road gap, but.
Except for the road gap, I had homies with both those sessions. But for the rest of that, that was pretty much only me and Friedel. And I remember being like, ah, this is kind of weird. But then we kind of got in the swing of things. And I remember being like, man, this is kind of sick, actually. And we were tagging stuff off, and everything was like going really well.
Yeah, it was a very fun experience.
Who brought up hitting the road gap?
Parker did, but it was something that had been, it was an unsaid shared goal, because I've been to Baker over the years many times, and the Mount Baker road gap is one of the most infamous, iconic jumps.
It's the one.
For probably over 20 years or something. It's just like, it looms large in that, like, culture there or whatever, and within snowboarding and ski documentation over the years. But I whenever I was in Baker, it was never the right time to do it. It was either baked out or it wasn't with people that wanted to do it. But I think you just brought it up, like, maybe second or third day we were there. You're like, yo, do you want to shoot the bro gap? And I was like, motherfucker, I was just about to ask you that.
Yeah, big question.
Yeah.
And you know this, man.
Yeah. And
I'd wanted to hit that for a while. I'd seen that in just so many snowboard videos, and I thought it looked so sick every time. I was like, oh, we got it. I was like, we're here. We got to hit it, you know?
Yeah. And we had, like, so Parker's been developing these connections, like, in Baker with Pat McCarthy, who's OG Bellingham snowboarder local, who is a 686 team manager, and then Brad Andrew, who's also an OG photographer from the area, who a snowboarder, but like obviously really locked into the scene there. So we collabed with Brad Andrew and Mark Rainery, who's a local snowboarder there, to like hit the jump to set this thing up, because those guys had just, like, Brad has probably shot it like a dozen times or something. So they just show up there and know what to do, and, you know, takes all the variables out of it for you. Mm-hmm. But there's also this Japanese crew in town, K Film. So there's three Japanese dudes that were in town that those guys were showing around as well. And they're super legit snowboarders, but it turned into sort of this mega collab sesh. Because if it was just Parker and I, it would have been a little tricky. But it was like, yeah, whatever. We'll go in and hit this jump with these guys that know what they're doing. So that's
how. And don't forget James, dude. James was part of that.
Well, we can get there.
Dunn was there with you guys.
Oh, no, that was the second session.
That was second session.
There's levels to this shit.
We're chapter one right now.
Yeah, chapter one. So Parker and I, this is like, again, early in our trip there. One of the first things we did, really, besides, you know, take some road laps and stuff. But we show up, we drive up to the road gap, and this is probably like at 8 in the morning or whatever, and we knew that there was going to be some other dudes there, because the Japanese guys, et cetera.
Right.
And there's this guy standing on the road, and he, when we walk down, and he's like rolling a cigarette, and he's like... Parker's like, oh, like, thanks for putting in the boot pack. And which somebody had put in a boot pack up the jump, which is kind of a bitch.
Right.
Through that, you know, that snow. And that was actually Mark Rainery, who's like the snowboarder that had actually done that. So this guy standing on the road, who was like friends with Mark or whatever, he's like, oh, I didn't do shit.
What? He's like, oh, I didn't do shit. I'm just here mucking up the scene, man. Yeah. I was just like, all right, dude.
You're like,
so
cool.
Dude, Mark has some fucking loose-ass homies. But this dude is like, he looks like a member of the Clash. Like, he's in like a combat jacket.
Mohawk, neck tattoos.
Hell yeah, player.
And I remember thinking he was drinking, too. Like, he was cranking
Why wouldn't a guy?
Alcohol.
Yeah.
And I remember being like, oh, this is probably one of Brad's like old alcoholic buddies from Bellingham who just came to watch the session or something.
Yeah, right. So we start shoveling the jump with the whole crew, and the Japanese guy showed up. We're all like pretty synced up, making this hit, doing block farming. It probably took like 2 hours. And this guy is sitting on the side, like, cranking PBR Tall Boys. And he's just talking nonstop, like, man, this is fucking awesome. The road gap's going down. And yeah, I'm just here to stink up the scene. He's like, he had, like, a vaguely New Zealand, potentially Aussie accent. It was hard to place. But anyway, you guys started to hit the jump. And I don't know, Parker, how was it hitting that fucker?
And I will say that he must have, I wasn't counting, but he probably drank like 8 tall boys or something, dude. Not exaggerating.
So yeah, Thane?
Before 10 a.m. or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, but he didn't lift a finger to help Bill jump or anything. He was just standing there drinking smoking.
Which is fun. Like,
he's a mascot.
If he's a homie that's just watching whatever, like, he can drink all he wants.
Yeah, but we were still, in the fucking... Everyone's lending a hand, and I was kind of like, this guy's not even helping out. So
we were in the zone, too. Like, we're hitting this fucking... the road gap right now. Like, this dude's just a bogey on the side.
It's
but
just,
like
weird peripheral shit that's happening, but you're not looking at it, like...
Well, we were all, like... we were in the zone. Like, I was like, well, this is going down. We're making this jump perfect. The Japanese dudes are definitely like, yeah, we want to make
all
this
right,
as nice
hang
as
hang on,
possible.
I'm going to press pause here for a second. So just, Parker, give us a little bit of perspective. So for the completely unindoctrinated that are not very familiar with the road gap, like, how big is this? True. After we lose those people, there are probably still people that don't know. Like, how big a deal is this? How sketchy is it? How high consequence? Like,
it's high consequence in the fact that if you don't clear the road gap,
it's bad.
Yeah, it's a bad deal. But I will say, going up there, it's a jump, and it's very rare that anything shoots this way. But when you're standing on it, it looks friendlier, like hitting it, than it looks on film. Like, it shoots really big, and it hits kind of small, actually. I remember that being my impression. But it's probably a good 30, 35 feet, 40 feet step down to, like, asphalt if you don't make it.
Sure.
Yeah.
And it's pretty – I'd say it's pretty easy to – to make it, but like, you can't not make it, right?
Yeah.
It's a mind fuck because it's a curved in-run through trees, and then you have to, you're way suspended above this road. So that's, I think you just went right for the dub 10 first hit, right? Because you didn't want to look at that fucking road.
Exactly. Because I was like, maybe I'll do a 180 or something. I was like, I just want to be spinning as much as possible to like not see anything.
Are you seeing the road coming off it, or are you just like see the landing across the way from up there?
Definitely
like,
see the road if you're doing a three.
Yeah, like right when you're coming into the jump, you don't see anything. But right when you leave the lip and dip, you're just staring at the road like the whole time until you're...
Yeah.
Over it. And it's, I mean, you and I have hit way bigger stuff than this, but it's just, it just looks
factor.
Cool.
Yeah.
But anyways, so I'm like hiking up and James is strapped in like at the top of the in run. And he's like, oh, I like, and I think you think this guy's gonna queue up a camera for me. I was like, what? I was like, you're gonna hit it. And he's like, oh yeah. And I was like, I was like, dude, you're drunk. I was like, well, same thing as you, Chris. Like, I'm not gonna tell anybody what to do or not to do. Like, yeah, man, you know, you're a grown man. Like, but I was like, I'm hitting this first. I'm gonna land something right now, and I don't want you like bombing out the landing. And for all I know, I'm like, oh, this dude's probably a pretty good boarder. He's like one of Brad's old friends.
Or he was like with Rennery, yeah. So.
Yeah. I'm like, he's probably legit, but this dude seems pretty loose. So I hit the jump and like crash, and I'm hiking out. And before I told him, I was like, they'll film you if you're going to hit this, but you got to call on the radio and tell them that you're going. Cause like from where you're filming that, you know, you got to like radio in, okay, ready to go, drop. And so
this is foreshadowing here for chapter 2.
Right.
Yeah. So I dropped in, took my hit. I mean, you can tell the story from there, but I don't remember hearing anything on the radio like, hey, is the landing clear? Is
no. it good to go? He said something. I was so focused on...
Oh. I know what he said.
He always said, dropping in five.
Yeah. He gets on the radio with zero other pretext and just goes, dropping in five.
This is, mind you, like, so, like, I'm fully in the zone here monitoring the situation because we have four snowboarders hitting the jump, Mark, the three Japanese guys, and Parker.
And to be clear, you're filming all of them because they're getting angles for you exactly. And Parker,
what,
too.
Three other cameras running as well, or two other
There's
cameras?
There's a camera down on the road. Ian Post was filming for 686 down on the road.
There's a drone.
There's,
Not yet. Okay.
And then the K-Films guys are filming wide angle from the takeoff. Mm-hmm. But I'm just trying to, like, keep tabs on all of them. And then... Yeah, wild card. You can't see anyone at the drop-in or anything. So it's just looking in the forest, and you can see people, like, you know, walking up, and then you can kind of keep tabs on the laps. But then randomly, like, when we're just chilling, he's just, like, dropping in five, like, over the radio. And I was like, well, that's James. Like, what the fuck? Press record. And he comes out and does the sketchiest backside three, under-rotated, under-speeded.
Dude, he did backside 270 into the uphill of the snowbank that you're landing over, like on the roadside of the snowbank, dude. And right when he went, a truck with a sled deck was driving right under the road.
That was the second hit. Oh, he hit it twice. God. He hit it twice.
Yeah, that was the second one, but that's the exciting one. And, dude, he missed this truck by like 2 feet. And if he'd gone any slower, he would have landed full backside 270 in the road and like potentially die.
Final. It would have been like some final destination for sure.
He would have really mucked up the scene there.
He would have mucked it up. And I remember watching it and being like, whoa, like, this guy doesn't know what he's doing, and he is drunk. I was like, dude, this is whack. Like, I don't really want this guy hitting this jump anymore because I don't want to see someone get hurt. And he came up from that, from, like, a big hit on the upside of that, and he's like, oh, my back's killing me. Like, oh, I don't think I'm going to hit it anymore. And I was like, yeah, good idea. Yeah.
At least he didn't put a hole in the landing, though.
What? When?
Yeah,
but it was like,
didn't
what
mess the landing.
Fuck. So,
so we should.
It was the
we
third.
Should, like, release that clip or something.
Yeah,
I want to see that.
We filmed it.
Well, yeah, he's a ghost, though.
How many times did you rewatch that clip that night?
Well, no, that was not. Yeah. We watched it a few, but, like, it was overshadowed by the clip we didn't get that day, which was P. White's first dub 10 stomp, which was your third hit. Is that right?
I think so. Something like that. Yeah. But I do want to finish the James story quickly if I can.
Well,
yeah.
I want to finish it after this. There's a sequence of events that takes place with that.
Chapter three.
Okay. Yeah. Cause we got to miss the shot first to finish the James story.
Yeah, true. All right. You can go in on that.
Well,
every filmer's worst nightmare.
Yeah, it was the worst nightmare because there's just a lot built up to shooting this gap. P. White's doing what we thought was like the first dub 10 that a skier's done over that. Everything about it was like a big moment and
big deal.
Yeah, it's a big deal. But there was just a lot of coordination going on from like the filmer side of things, and I was trying to make sure everyone was ready, like down the road. Up on the takeoff, these camera angles, and then Brad Andrew, actually the photographer, fired up a drone as well up top, so there's like this added commotion or whatever.
Yeah,
but I was like, I guess Mark was running the radio at the top and he heard me yelling ready, which what I was doing was I yelling down at the road like, are you ready? Double checking to those guys, and then I was gonna be like, confirm on the radio that I was ready. But he heard through the air that I was ready, and sent.
He heard your question and thought this was a confirmation.
Correct, yep. And then cleared Parker to drop. So everything was being coordinated, and we had all the things in place,
yeah,
but the radio communication was just off. And so, like, it's the opening shot of the trailer for Zigzag, but I was running a handy cam, like, behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, we're ready, like, over the radio as Parker hits the takeoff. So I can't see anything until probably the 5 feet of takeoff when he comes out of the trees. So I just see him coming out of the trees. I fucking had a little heart attack.
I had
time to, like, press record mid-air, but I just looked in the viewfinder, and he stomped a dub 10 and rode away. And I was like, I fucking missed that. And so everyone cheers. There's a whole group there, right? Yeah. So everyone's like, yeah!
Yeah.
And then I'm sitting there, like, you got to be fucking kidding me. Like, the biggest, worst case Ontario you can have, yeah, as a filmer.
It's the worst nightmare for a filmer.
Yeah, and, like, on the biggest, like, the most, like, high-consequence shot of that season thus far.
Yeah.
So, and maybe of the whole season.
Yeah.
You know, and...
Or can you want to just go do that again?
Well, dude, he walks up, and I like, ran down to, like, meet him halfway, and I was just like, he's like, I fucking just stomped a dub 10 on the Baker Road Gap, and I was like, yeah, I fucking missed that shot. There was a huge clusterfuck of miscommunication. Like, somebody dropped you and you shouldn't have dropped, and you're like, what?
Yeah, what happens in your head then, Parker?
I was like, you're messing with me. And he was just like,
oh, shit.
He was like, Friedel was like, I would not joke about something like that.
So, like, I don't fucking joke about missing shots, right?
Yeah,
it's like,
that's not a joke.
And then I just was like, oh, you missed it. And I was just remember being like, oh, God. I was like, all right, well, landed it once, like, I can land it again, you know?
Mm.
Yeah. And then I sessioned all day and didn't land it.
The problem is
that landing is
the landing's flat and you can't carve, like, super far crazy distances to either side, but there was also four other people hitting that jump.
Yeah.
So it was getting
bunged up.
Banged up so quickly. And man,
time you sessioned it, there was like another five bomb holes or something. And it was just like.
And you were taking like.
Between each hit.
You were landing 4 point and you couldn't stomp through it because it was so like cratered out.
Yeah.
And it was absolutely miserable. I was like, he's trying something that he already did. And not like not getting it, like diminishing returns here. And in the middle of that, James drops in again. In the middle of this, like, everyone just like fuck off and let Parker get this shot was basically like how I wanted to, you know, but like it wasn't obviously a place to do that. Like, I think the two Japanese guys got good shots and Mark Rainery got a back set too, but James, like, an hour later after almost KOing himself, TKO himself,
couple few more
does another for real, dude. Then drops in again, does the same, like, dropping in five, like, or like he goes nothing type thing, like, and it's like, is this nothing, like. And does the same exact thing, like what I would do if I was doing a frontside three off that gap, which is like not fully committing to the pop and then doing a super hunched over toe side off your toe edge, blind backside 270, not getting the rotation and landing flap right into the snowbank again. And that was the time when that pickup truck was rolling down and with the sled deck, and the timing was, am I going to witness a death? Like, I missed a shot, and now there's this. Like, what the fuck is going on?
What is today?
Yeah, what is today? And so then he gets up out of that second, and he's like, that's it for me on this jump. It's like, somebody, like, I was, like, yelling down, like, tell him he's fucking cut off. Like, this is frigged. But, like, Mark or Brad, I don't want to, like, be an asshole to your homie, but, like, this is like, I have so many nerves and things are way too much is running through my head. Like, as like, yeah.
I don't want to watch someone die today.
But anyway, like, PY called after what, like seven hits or something.
Yeah.
We didn't get the shot, like, but we.
Yeah, so I was just like pretty discouraged, obviously, and just frustrated, whatever. But we're like, it was still dope hanging out with Japanese guys and Brad. And from like walking back towards the car at the end of the day, and I was like, I was just shooting shit with Brad. And I was like, Brad, like, your homie's kind of loose, dude. Like, I wasn't really down with that. And he was just like, what guy? And I was like, James, man, like your old buddy. He's like, James. He's like, dude, I've never met James. I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, dude, James was just hitchhiking down at Graham's this morning. I picked him up, and then, yeah, we just couldn't really get rid of him. He's like, I've never met that guy in my life. I was like,
what? I thought he was your buddy.
I was like, yeah, everyone, there were so many people there that everyone thought that James was, like, the other guy's friend. And, dude, James was a drunk hitchhiker from the side of the road who got picked up that morning. And did maybe one of the gnarliest things of his life. Oh, I don't know. I don't know what that guy's like.
Who knows?
Who knows?
Who knows?
Yeah, I was just like, dude, what? Like, you didn't know that guy? He's like, nah. He's like, yeah, that guy's crazy. I was like, dude, you're crazy. And you were like letting him do that, man.
He's like, I thought you were letting him do that.
Yeah, straight up. Yeah, like, exactly. Everyone had just accepted this wild card. Because we weren't, there was such a collaboration of people. Like, the Japanese guys were like, yeah, he was a hitchhiker. And they're like, hitchhiker? Like, what?
Because then I went up to the Japanese guys and was like, Kote, yeah, like, that, no one knew that guy. That guy was stranger, like, not friend, stranger. And he was like, stranger. No. I was like, oh yes, you guys. Dude, it was insane. And then that became the whole joke, was that like, I didn't get the shot,
but James did.
James could live.
Oh.
Well, there was two jokes. Like, seriously, that's how we rationalized it. I remember, like, we went down to that little pad we were staying at that night. And we were watching the shots of James, and it was just Parker and I in the room. And we were like, well, it was like such a relief that James was okay. And then it was also like, is James a ghost that just haunts the Baker Road yet? Because he like came and went in such a bizarre fashion, like just kind of in and out of the ether there, that it was like, maybe he's
imagine
just
if James
like,
showed up.
What's really
up the second time you hit it?
No, what's really fucked up is that when they left at the end of the day, where James had landed, there were no tracks.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Or like, we were gonna watch the shots, and yeah, he's like not on.
He can't be captured.
Right. But
all right. So redemption. So it happened. There's a shot of a dub 10 in this movie.
Yeah. So we're basically like, well, this has to go down. And as we were talking about earlier, it was snowing every day. And basically the forecast, well, first off, we were trying to splice these shots together because we had like this sketchy drone shot and that had a landing. And then
didn't you
like,
send him to me to like
yeah.
play
I was like, what do you think
with?
About this? But like knowing full well, like that it wasn't whack. And Parker's like, dude, I just wanted that dream, that classic shot from the side.
Yeah.
And so we're like, yep, word. All right, we're going back. And like, it was snowing every day. So it reset in like 3 days. Nicely. Yeah. Two days. And we went back. Mike King had just rolled into town. And we went back with just Brad Andrew and Mike King and built that thing better as well. I will say that for sure. We added a little more tang onto that. So that shot, and then P. White stomped two motherfucking perfect dub 10s.
Two?
Yeah.
He did it. He stomped it and then just did another one for safety. Because, I mean, there was landing, right?
Yeah. I did it. And then I was just like, I don't trust that. I was like, Frida's like, I got the shot. Nope. I was like, dude, I was like, cool. I'm going to do like a couple more so that we really, really have this. And then we can call it a day. Yeah. I stomped. I went my first one and like almost landed, but kind of hip checked a little. stomp the second, and then stomp the third.
In kind of like a crazy snowy day. It was an ill day.
It was like a full blizzard. The first hit was like full blizzard, and I was like, I don't care, drop. Like, we're doing this.
Yeah, and then I had Mike King shooting a wide angle off the takeoff, which turned out to be such a dope shot.
Yeah.
Mm.
So,
so you didn't use any of the angles from the first session. That's all the second time.
No, first, it's all the second time. What you're watching is the day. And it really, like, I do believe that, like, that shot is way better than the one that we missed. So it all worked out so damn well. I mean, goddamn, Parker, when we got back and we're like, it's like the shot doesn't exist until it's like triple backed up on a hard drive. Right. And then you can watch it on a screen. Right. Because, you know, I knew that I had it, but it was like, we're going to watch this thing like 10 times on my laptop and then like breathe. And we were just like, oh, that's it, dude.
Yeah, it was pretty tense. And when I dropped in the first time and didn't land, I was just like, oh, God, no. I was like, oh, please, please, Jesus. But I thought of going back for a second session and not getting it. I was just like, that can't happen. No. Like, this is going down. Yeah.
God damn.
But it was pretty tense. The whole thing, like, when we went back that second time, like, no one was really talking. It was just kind of like everyone was on eggshells.
It was
like,
loaded. Oh,
okay. It wasn't party vibes.
Yeah.
Mm. It was a loaded scenario. But we were.
That's why you need James to bring the energy down, dude.
James is bringing something.
Word.
But yeah, after that, man, everything else
right
was.
Right now? Because I just missed a call from Tinky.
Oh, sick.
What were you going to say, Friedel?
I was going to say that was such a massive relief. And like such a huge thing, like that, a burden that was removed from our backs.
Yeah, I mean, so you, like, would have carried that
the rest of the season, felt
the rest
like
of your life.
Bonus,
like, you would have
something.
Carried that if you had not gotten that shot again.
Yeah. Like, that is the ultimate like filmer nightmare. I remember Friedel called me that night, and I remember Parker, was your knee a little tweaked?
The shoulder,
shoulder. And I remember you just like weren't feeling super hot, and I was like kind of keeping tabs, like, oh, how are these guys doing, and trying to coordinate. Actually, I think I was trying to get Rainville out to join you guys at one point, and just like moving all the chess pieces around. I remember just checking in, you called me or I called you, and you're just like, well, really good news, really bad news, Parker dub 10 the Baker Road gap, but I missed the shot. I was like, no, don't fuck with me.
You had the same response.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh. Yeah.
Anyway, it's the ender of the movie, so. Yeah.
It's the opener of the trailer and the ender of the movie. It's actually like a very, I've never even quite put that in that perspective before, but.
Damn, it makes for a good story.
yeah. God damn. James, dude.
What? Okay.
I wonder what James is doing right now. He's probably in New Zealand prison or something.
Probably.
I do want to move on to other stuff, but last question on this. What's the decision to include the behind the scenes Friedel cursed being like, fuck, I missed it in the trailer? How's that come about?
I think I had labeled that shot as like an interesting shot because I knew that was a very candid moment. That's
real
very
moment.
Raw. Mm. That I was like, damn, if not for nothing, I'm really glad that I captured this, my reaction to missing that shot. And you can see him stomp a dub 10 in that shot.
Yeah.
And so when Berman was cutting the trailer, I think I'd gone back to Vermont. That was last July. And you were like unsure if that was whack or not. And I really wanted to go full raw with some of this stuff. Mm. And I was like, I think you were like, yo, what do you think about using this shot? And I was like, I don't give it. I'm all for it, dude. Like, that shows some real ass shit going down. Like, it's like not a cookie cutter moment, that's for sure.
No.
But
I think from my perspective, it was very we're almost poking fun at ourselves and setting the stage with the text that was like, you know, 19 years of this, and it was like, You're missing dub dance on the Baker Road app. Like, shit just happens. And it was just illustrative of a very real thing that no matter how much you know, experience you have under your belt, you know, once in a while, stupid shit happens.
Mm. Word. Darkness, what's your favorite shot that you got the course of this season filming for Zigzag?
I had so many others that weren't in the movie, but Berman just kept missing shots.
All right, let's just tell all those stories. Like, Dark would have had the opener and the ender. Sorry, Parker. But, yeah.
I know that Switch 9, I was pretty fired up on that one. I saw that kind of landing and what looked like could have been a good jump spot. And
dude, I want to tell a quick story and cut you off on that one, because
yeah, go off.
I remember you guys were all getting after it in Montana with Sean, and I was sitting in the office and I was just trying to get on a trip somewhere. But the role that I've kind of put myself in over the past few years is filling in the blanks where, you know, I try to send off other crews and just not go anywhere until I'm actually needed. And I remember it was either you or Sean probably sent me a photo from the landing, like where we actually shot that video shot. And I was like, damn, that is so fucking sick. And like the next day he hit me up or somebody hit me up and was just like, yeah, like Sean is sick. Like, can you get somebody else up here? Can you come up here?
Didn't he hurt his back?
He blew his back out. Yeah.
Oh, that's what it was. Okay. Yeah, he blew his back out.
He couldn't snowmobile anymore or something.
But yeah,
the day before, like the sunny day, like finally first sunny day,
mm-hmm.
The 174 got stuck or something. He tried like getting her unstuck and he like couldn't move for a week because his back was free.
Yeah, that's
was like,
right.
Oh, fuck. All right.
But I remember driving like the 18 hours, like the very next day after I got that phone call, I was like, yep, that's what I'm looking for. Hey. Just like packed up like that night and left at like 5 a.m, like as quick as I could. And I remember driving up just like thinking about that particular shot. And like that was like something that I was so hyped to do. And I think that was one of the first things we did.
Mm.
Yeah.
Dude, the Muzzy dumped back on that too.
It's pretty serious.
And really sick, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, that was cool. Yeah, we saw that one and it was kind of like, you know, you see so much shit out there and you're like, does that work? Is that good? Like, a lot of flat light days. And then finally, like, we kind of went back to it. I was like, dude, I think this goes. Let me hike up there and see. And yeah, that was really cool. Yeah, probably one of my favorites of my seg there.
Hell yeah.
That was a good one.
Is that the one that ends your part in that part?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like
kind of. It also ends the trailer, too.
Action shot on the trailer.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's right. First action shot on the trailer.
Yeah, it's like a canyon gap almost. Like,
yeah, it's crazy.
There's some like serious gappage style in that gap.
Oh, yeah.
I like that that one from BC too, that Step Down 7 Japan.
Oh,
that
dude, they're like
cool and
Travis
like really
Rice
sweet
style
zone. Had never seen that zone. Was with Tanky and Laurent and found this new zone and had just like, you know, stuff for all three of us to hit. And yeah, it was real cool up in Zippermouth Creek, British Columbia.
Yeah.
Oh, that zone. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that one has some major, like, OG snowboard step-down stees. I feel like I've seen, like, 1,000 old snowboard shots that have step-downs to super steep landings like that. And there's not many people hit jumps like that these days. And the Japan is very nice. So that might have been my favorite
Thank
shot,
you much.
Actually. But
yeah, props, Dark. That one was pretty gnarly.
Appreciate it. Yeah, I was stoked. I think that was, like, second hit. The first one went a little too big. Dude, that was the same day that Laurent tried that three and, like, ran right into that tree and got sent.
Yeah.
And I initially, like, we were picking out lines, and that line that he hit that on, I was like, all right, maybe I'll take that one. And then we kept talking, and it like only went like the way I saw it, it would have been like a right handed spin. I was like, oh, maybe if you want that, Laurent, because I think he was also interested. I was like, you take that, like, I'll go over there and do a little pat down over there. Mm. So I think, yeah, worked out.
I haven't heard that story about Laurent getting worked there. What happened?
I don't know if that shot was in this.
It wasn't.
Made the movie or not.
No.
Dude, it was the crash, segment.
Yeah. Yeah, he tried doing like a three, and there was just this tree that he hit, like, not on purpose. It just sent it, man. It was so like, gnarly. Like, me and Thayner at the time, like,
sizable step
holy
down.
Holy shit, dude, yeah.
Thing came out of nowhere.
Did you guys see that? We're like, yeah. That's why you don't want to hit that, man.
It was, like, same size as that one I did a seven on, like, similar style, but if I would have hit a tree midair,
right in the middle, right in the middle.
Sent me, yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah,
that's crazy. Gnarly. You don't see that. You don't see that ever. No. That's nuts.
Though, ironically enough, I feel like it was a couple days later, he actually stomped a three off something similar, and then in the outrun, just like his back just seized up, and then he was actually out of commission for like a couple weeks after that.
I think that was his closing shot in his
it
segment.
It was. That's right. Right after we cut
it. That first little drop and then like skiing fast and then pops that three and stomps. And I like cheer section at the bottom was going off. And then he just like after riding a little way. Yeah. He just like is grabbing his back and just like screaming like in serious pain. We're like, Jesus fucking Christ, dude. Are you all right, man? And that was the end of his day.
Well, he never unshoveled snowmobiles for a trip before that.
that's
true. His back took a little work. He had stuck. Swiss nightmare.
We
learned how to sled for his first time and a couple of stucks, couple of freakouts. I know at one point Thane turns to me. He's like, dude, do we just tell Laurent to turn around and go back to his truck? Because it's a bluebird. Like really good pow day. And by the time we got up there, we like got to see that zone, but it was like the end of the day. I was like, yeah, we've all been there.
Oh, absolutely. But, I don't think we ever touched on this, but just to backtrack real quick. So the year before was the first time Laurent became my like road trip buddy driving from Denver, what ultimately became a destination up in BC. And he borrowed Mike Weishi, who owns RMU Skis, has this old 1,000cc four-stroke Yamaha, and somehow
Haas.
Yeah, it's a Haas of a sled. I mean, you guys know what I'm talking about. And somehow Laurent got to borrow that thing for the trip, and that is the shittiest sled to be on if you don't know how to drive a sled in PAL. And so it was just like the worst of all factors coming together and making for just like miserable situation.
Was he on that this year as well, getting stuck up in Whistler?
What was he on up there?
He's on the Swiss Nightmare that Thayner was on this year.
That's right.
Bought a snowmobile.
Yeah.
Oh, that's...
You were in Montana, and then you left, and we all boogied up to BC, and it was hilarious, because going through the border sometimes, like, we got clean records, got nothing bad going, nothing in the truck, and they always, like, you know, sometimes will give you a hard time. We had the easiest time getting through. It's Laurent, the Swiss kid, in Berman's rig towing snowmobiles with like no paperwork.
Two and they're slides.
Like, yeah, come on in.
Yeah.
It was like that doesn't happen, man. Like, that was crazy.
Yeah.
We put out a request for questions on Instagram yesterday, and someone sent in, I should read their handle, rcrewcar21 sent in a question. My 6-year-old son wants to know how someone who looks like Parker White is a good skier.
That's awesome.
Is he talking about your haircut or
I'd say the whole package.
You must have been at Whitefish premiere.
Yeah. Tell your dad sheer pride, just blind pride. It can bring you anywhere.
Yeah. Maybe a little trouble at the border, but you'll get there eventually.
Yeah. You'll have a little bumps and bruises along the way. I can promise you. But you'll make it. Oh my god, dude! That was like some kids on New Schoolers. They made a whole article about me, and it just said the biggest transformation in skiing: Parker White, and it's just like a photo of me looking fat, and then like a good one from when I was younger. I was like, damn. I was like, yeah, oh, that's fair enough, actually.
Well, yeah, there's like skinny Parker with long hair, like young, like 19-year-old, like svelte Parker with like long hippie hair, and then there's like the cop mullet Porker White. Porker White.
Touche. 1 point you.
With a mustache.
I can't even argue with that, man.
Wearing a NASCAR jacket.
Yeah.
You're just saying the same thing my mother says when we have dinner together.
Well, this year for romance, you guys were able to make up for all that lost time for Zigzag and film a ton together. I want to hear about a little bit about that. What was the season like?
It
was good. It was like, it was, for whatever reason, really difficult though. Like, my biggest takeaway at the very end of the season was like, dude, I don't even know what we got or how we'll make a segment out of that, because I just remember it not always being great, and when things were really good, things not lining up. And it was like, it was a super fun year, like they always are, and looking back on the segment that we filmed together, I'm super proud of it, and I think it's a dope segment in the movie. It bangs.
Yeah,
but like, having come off that Zigzag year, I had like really big aspirations, and I would like, I journal all my shots that I get and everything. And I think I had like 9 shots or 10 like A plus shots that I was really hyped on, which is a normal seg is like between 20 and 30. And I was just like, I remember being like, what happened? Like everything was going wrong. But then when I was in retrospect, I was like, that was so awesome. You know what I mean? But in, and it was, fuck, all those jump sessions and all those back-to-back sessions we had were dope. And we went to some super cool new areas. But I remember being in the middle of it, like, dude, I don't know how we're going to make segments out of this. And I feel like we weren't getting anything.
Was that your vibe, too, at the time, Chris?
Nope.
I was fucking killing it. I don't know about you, Parker.
Dude, I was, yeah, I had a fire lit for sure this year.
Hell yeah.
With it being the last year and just wanting to, you know, go out with a bang, and then, yeah, being like full on from the start. But no, I thought, like, you know, that's just, we were just fucking rolling with the punches, man. Like, some trips we went on were good. Some, just like your typical seasons, shit happens.
And the shots we were getting were really good.
I think Parker had a no-board addiction, too. That might have thrown a little wrench in there.
Yeah, that's true.
Dude, why are we not skiing? Because you didn't bring the boots out today. no, man. Like, I thought it was sick, and I was just kind of enjoying it as we went. Try not, like, thinking too much along the winner until like the end of like what it's going to look like, but just like enjoying it at the time. But like you said, yeah, we got to go a couple different new spots and ski some really good pal. Yeah, I don't know, just different every season. Yeah, no, I thought it was a good one though. And
a couple really good sessions too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like just really ones that like tied the room together, you know? Yeah, I mean, definitely for both
Utah,
you guys.
Like,
yeah,
you guys didn't like. I know it took some arm twisting to get Parker down to Utah, one of his least favorite places. And then once he was down there, I think he was stoked on it. Like, Thane's like, dude, it's really firing. And we've obviously always just been like, no, head north, go to BC. But it wasn't really going off up there.
Yeah,
like we had started it with Berman for, what was that, 2 weeks? And like,
I was,
it
was 3 weeks,
right,
man. And that was like
3 weeks.
An unfulfilled promise from Canada.
Yeah. It wasn't like firing like it had in past years. And it was like, all right, we'll head south. And yeah, that zone we went to was really sick, man. There was like nobody there. And Thane,
yeah, that was weird. Like,
a lot of snow,
Thane's
too.
Like, yeah.
Like, ton of snow. Like, it was firing, and that's a super popular zone, and we had it completely to ourselves.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we went to Idaho. That we made the best of Idaho.
That's where it
Idaho
started.
Utah. It was Logan. That's a popular zone, but that was that place. Like we were just on a tear. That went super well. But then we went to Idaho, and all the stuff we wanted to ski had gotten warm, like right before we got there. And we still had good sessions, but we kind of missed like the bulk of it, like the stuff that I personally really wanted to ski.
Mm.
And then it was just Whistler after that, and we had a couple good days in Whist, but it kind of tapered out.
Was it March? Like, because February was Utah, and it was Whistler, it was really good, and then it seemed like March kind of just was funky for us. Yeah, we went to
and we went to Cook and got fully skunked too.
Yeah,
yeah. So there was a couple things just weren't lining up.
Yeah,
yeah. But I think yeah, but the stuff that we got, like that one shot from Baker, is huge. Like it's all
quality.
The subtract your like misses from the overall what you get, right? Because
true.
It's like the mathematical word for that. But basically zero sum. Yeah.
And like I said, in retrospect, I was like, oh, this is all really dope. But while we were in it, I was like, oh, nothing's working.
Right.
Yeah.
Cause I mean, like, damn, when like all the dust settled on that, like cutting that footage, I was like, this is like it was like reunited and it felt so good. Cause like you guys, I think after that leap year season, doing your own shit, then coming back and getting into it was like such a fitting way to do the, you know, it's like how you came into level one 10 years ago and it's how we're doing the 20th year part. And man, it really delivers, dude. Like
it's strong.
Yeah.
I remember definitely having that feeling after Zigzag and being like that, like had a really fun season, but damn, that was weird. Like I didn't ski with Parker at all. And then I remember like talking with you, Pete, and I think when Sarah, you guys showed up to my house and I told her like, you know, basically that she's like, yeah, he was kind of saying the same thing. And so going into this one, I was definitely like, all right, it's the last one, like want to link with this dude and just like, yeah, let's fucking get back to it. Do what we do.
Yeah.
And like, even when you guys went to Japan, like I know I was hitting up Friedel and you guys like, fuck, I want to like, you know, get on it with you guys.
Plan.
And you guys did that. Yeah. And then when you came back, that's when I was like, dude, let's do Utah. You're like, I don't know. I was like, dude, it's fucking snowing. Let's just link up, get it going. And
the rest was history.
The rest is
we took a romance. Chris and I took a 1 year break.
Just need a little time off.
Now we're stronger than ever.
It was kind of we tried a long distance thing.
Yeah.
And it actually worked really well.
It worked. It worked for what it was.
But
we kind of realized
we
need each other.
Distance makes the heart grow fonder.
We're even experimenting with new things when we're together now, like me hitting jumps first.
That's just weird.
Yeah.
Don't take it there. It's called romance, by the way.
Sleeping in a Super 8 in this twin bed all by myself. This is weird. What's going on here? I got this mullet in my face trying to cuddle me from behind. What's going on? This is super spacious. I'm not used to this.
Yep.
Yeah.
Have you guys seen the movie enough times now to be able to name a favorite segment from it? That movie being Romance?
Romance or Zigzag?
Romance. Well, great question. I'd like to know both, but since we're talking about romance,
should do both for sure.
All right, both.
I'm curious.
All right.
Romance?
Yeah, we'll start there.
All right. Romance, a couple segments I was surprised by because I didn't fully know their involvement with filming, and I thought it came out really dope was Emil Bergeron, for one, has a really dope seg, and I didn't even really know he was filming for the movie, And then two, Lucas Walks put it down yes. super hard.
Mm.
That was one that was kind of a sleeper for me. Like, oh, what did this guy get up to? And I saw the segment, like that dub 12 to the bottom of the train. I was like, God damn. But my favorite segment from Zigzag is Lucas. Lucas has my favorite seg.
Mm-hmm.
The other Lucas.
And granted,
right.
I was there for like a lot of the stuff I saw in Japan and was just really excited about it. Like, this is going to be dope. But that's just the vibe and everything is so good in that. And I just love that segment. And from Zigzag, mine, dude, my segment's the best in that.
Own it. Own it. You can own it.
Word. Sheila, what about you?
Yeah, for romance, I'd say, yeah, Lucas for sure. Fucking both Lucases. I mean, mm-hmm. they were fucking sick. Really fucking sick. I don't know, dude, that movie, I thought like it kept my attention the whole time.
Yeah. Every like, segment's good.
It was crazy. Cause Denver, I left and basically didn't see the movie, but I got to watch it twice. And then in Annecy, that was like the first time really seeing it. And I was like, all of this is in the movie. Like, how did I not see this? But no, it was sick, man. Yeah, no, I think everyone like fucking went hard, played a part, and just like, you know, even that opener, like Wallace and Hornbeck and Casabon starting it off with that track and just like some mean ass skiing and, you mm-hmm. know, not seeing those dudes in the flick for a couple of years. And then, yeah, a couple of new guys, like you said, Emil, both the Lucases, man, like fuck, the movie is so damn good.
Yeah. It's like, I think it's maybe like you guys' best.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So it's like 60 minutes of just hammers. Like really, really good
dude, skiing. Sammy Ortlieb, like, fuck. Dude, mm-hmm. There's just a lot of really good skiing, different skiing. Keegan, holy shit, man. I feel like after the Whitefish premiere, there were a lot of people like, God damn, Keegan. Like, yeah, dude, he fucking went in.
He's a real deal.
Yeah, no doubt. Dude,
Sammy Ortlieb has got notable two segs in Zigzag too, because I remember hearing about the water seg, and anytime I hear about a segment that has mm-hmm. like a theme or a prop, I'm like, this might be gimmicky or something, you
like
know?
A novelty part.
Yeah,
I'm just kind of, I'm like, yeah, I don't know. I'm just old school. Like, I just like seeing the skiing. But the water segment is like one of my favorites in Zigzag. I like that track. And I thought filming from underwater and all that was like done really well. And I thought it was really dope. And then going into Sammy's part before mine, that's like one of Sammy's strongest parts he's ever had. Maybe his best part ever. That's a super sick part. And then his seg from this year in Romance is like,
it's got like another double seg.
It was incredibly, like all the stop motion stuff is so incredibly well done and adds like a really great element and vibe to like the middle of the movie, like really picks it up. And Sammy's whole involvement in the past 2 years has been just rad.
Yeah, dude, in Zigzag too, like I think Will Wesson skiing to some fucking rap music, which is
my jam, dude,
was just like, let's fucking stay. That was ill, man. Just like some different style that, you know, because fucking music changes the feel so much. And that for me, like, I mean, obviously you dudes know, and obviously look at a handful of my parts in the past, it's like rap tunes. That's what I listen to. That's what my phone's playing in my pocket 24/7. So that, I was like, fuck yeah, that was sick.
That was a Friedel idea. I remember Friedel like, yeah. What do you think of this for Will? I was like, I kind of want to switch it up. And I was like, yep.
Wizard.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right, well.
What's your favorite, Connor? What's your favorite segs?
Oh, God. From Zigzag? Actually, I'm going to go with the Team Sweden opener. Like,
yeah, that's dope.
Yeah.
Very hot shit. Very cool to see Pabin getting after it after like taking some time off and doing more camera shit, I was like, what? Man, this dude can't still ski like that. That's fucked up. So, yeah, I'm going.
Yeah, his
dude, he's fucking insane.
His nose butter and his three through the...
Yeah, the late Collins three. Yeah.
The late three, the nose butter nine or whatever.
Yeah.
Nolly nine.
Dude, switch nose butter to like, he's not even looking at the rail, that opening shot. He's just like going off field. He's like looking in front of him, skiing switch, hits that.
Yeah.
Does it like twice to like 180 out or and switch one out and then like the shifty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Pavin crushes zigzag very, very hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. All those guys did Kimbo too. That was really dope.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and such a sick vibe coming from like the intro all in the same track where it's like this very vibey behind the scenes stuff into that. I'm a big fan. But yeah.
Yeah.
Enough for me. You guys, we got a lot of other stuff to talk about. We've been talking to you guys for forever. So I want to wrap up this part of it. And anything that last questions for Parkness and Darker that you guys want to ask?
Darker.
I've never heard it put that way.
How has that never ever been said that way?
Yeah, I think we're gonna use that.
Parkness and Darker.
That one's gonna stick.
Yeah.
You just wiped my. You just blew my mind. Yeah. What? How are you guys feeling?
Anything else? Good, anything else you want to add?
Trying to think things from that year.
Nipah football rules.
I think I'm good. I did have criticisms from that year, but I'm not going to go into them. Just a couple things I didn't like about that movie.
That's all right. Go for
it. Overall, it's a really good one.
We used a song from a Poor Boys movie in Casey Dean's part.
Oh.
Yeah. That's what he's talking about.
That was a large faux pas. I was very upset with that.
Jeez. And we're sitting next to like the music encyclopedia here. Friedel.
Don't put this shit on me, Ricky Bobby.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not putting this shit on Friedel at all. Moreover, I'm just like shocked that somehow slipped through the cracks. And that was a track that.
Oh, so that was not deliberate.
No, not at all. Not only did Casey actually brought that track up 2 years ago, and we tried to get it cleared for his part 2 years ago, and never happened. And then
still after LJ used it.
Still after LJ used it. Yeah, and then I finally got it cleared by getting in touch with Gil Scott Heron's son, who now sends me holiday emails. Like,
dope.
With, like, updates on his family, what's going on, which is so fucking cool. It's like, oh, man, he probably has no idea why he has my email address and why I'm on this list, but this is kind of cool. And, so we finally cleared that track for Casey's part. I had no idea.
Damn.
Sorry.
Yeah, I remember watching it and just being like, that is unfortunate. Yeah. But that's, and to Casey's credit, there's some hammers in there.
Dude,
that flat three off the huge ramp, I saw that in person. That was mental. But I really disliked that song being in the movie.
I remember hearing it for the first time. We did like a little private screening that day before the world premiere.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, you were just... You just were like, no venues.
Yeah.
Well, shit.
It's like, well, it's too fucking late now.
Hey,
take this one.
We all make mistakes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And some are just completely unforgivable,
Bernard. Dude, actually, zigzag. Fucking Duncan Adams.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about quality over quantity, ooh. Man. What did he have, like three or four shots? And they
were
insane, dude.
Hammer, like, hammers.
Yeah.
No love. It could have been three nominations for Lines of the Year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude.
Yeah.
Insane, man.
We nominated him Line of the Year for sure.
Mm.
For sure, yeah.
He has the three best backcountry shots in the whole movie, and they're consecutive. Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Dude, that pillow... The like double lines and natty 360 off of that wind lip is so psychotic. And then
yes,
Dude, I saw that his closing pillow
like
line.
A week, right? Wasn't that like all filmed in a week at the end of the season, like April?
Duncan or? Always does that, though. Remember, he closed out Light Years because he skied with us. I wasn't even there. He skied with you guys for like 4 days, and he closed out the whole movie. That's kind of Duncan's
M.O.
And seeing Duncan, you guys just had so much footy for romance to sort through it. I don't blame this, but when I saw Duncan's raw file, I'd like to see a recut or something of that, because Duncan had a lot of footy from last year that didn't quite see the light of day. And I think that's probably the case for a lot of people, because there was just so many people filming so much footy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, he had a bunch of footage from this year. That line from Revelstoke, though, his closing pillow line.
Oh,
Jesus Christ.
Dude, I went to that zone and it didn't register to me to start from where he did. Like, I was looking at all the pillow lines and I didn't see that line because I was like, oh no, you can't. Like, I didn't think you could tip in from the top the way he did. That was heavy, dude. Yeah. Yeah. Shout out to Duncan, because. Dude, Duncan's clips, always. I mean, per usual, but just incredible.
Dude, I blame the guy this year who stole his fucking truck and sled. Fuck.
Oh, yeah.
Fuck that, dude.
Like, dude, Dunk was, I know we did that trip. He went and did some faction stuff and then was like planning on coming back. And he's like, dude, I'll give you a shout. Let's link. And that was fully the plan. Then he shows back up to the Calgary airport and his life got stolen. Like, you know, it was like, well. That put a damper on
they
my
They took
season.
His goddamn crock pot.
Yeah. You don't touch a man's crock pot.
You don't do that.
And the credence.
The items. Yeah. And the credence.
The tapes.
Duncan was so upset that I FaceTimed when he was drinking non-alcoholic beer. I was like, oh man, you just be in a bad place, man, because that is just weird as hell.
Yeah, he's like, getting drunk isn't going to solve anything. So I got to pretend to get drunk without
I just want the pain, but not the release.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I'm feeling kind of dark right now. I was like, okay, buddy, you're going to make it through. But yeah. Yeah, Duncan, what a change.
Savage,
yeah. I think that pretty much sums her up. Were you forgetting anything?
Well, I just wanted to mention, I mean, it's nothing too, I don't know if it's a full conversation, but just to cap off that part that I think we're both really proud of, your Ender and Zigzag, is like, there was a really cool way to end the season for the both of us, and that was like going
Garbage
from
bear?
Nah, true
dancing in
no,
the parking
but it
lot?
Was like going from the Eagle, like the Eagle Pass, basically round two,
mm-hmm.
Heli stuff, and then getting invited to Kimbo Sessions, which was another one of these like parallel thinking kind of things, because I think it was both on our minds, this Kimbo Session thing, and then I think it was, we were at Baker, and I think you had brought it up again. Like, did you think about going to Kimbo Sessions? And I was like, motherfucker, I never thought you'd ask. I had already been, like, talking to Kim a little bit, and he invited us over there, which is kind of it feels like a goddamn privilege. But it was...
That is the best.
It was such a crazy experience, I think, for both of us. And I'm sure, Dark, you can attest going this year as well. But you're basically cooped up. Like, we're rolling with, like, one, two, three other people throughout the course of winter, like, being pretty isolated, like, to ourselves, trying to stay away on purpose from other people and, you know, powder hogging or whatever you want to call it. But then you go to something like Kimbo Sessions, which is a little... isolated or a little like a incubator of a park scene from what we all grew up doing, which is like a little teeny park a la East Coast or Mammoth or whatever. But and then you just see like this condensed version of what everyone else is doing in the park scene, and it's fucking pretty inspiring,
dude. It's largely inspiring. It's like oh, this whole ski thing is not alive and well, but just thriving and crazier and doper than I ever knew possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is how I feel in that Kimbo. I'm just like, wow, like skiing is insanely sick. I had no idea.
Dude, the stoke, the amount of people, all the crazy shit. It's like, I remember watching like footage in Annecy and being like, dude, I was there the whole time, but I feel like I didn't see any of this because there's just so many people doing sick shit the whole time, like riding up the T-bar, just rubbernecking, like, damn, that was sick. That was sick. Like, it's insane, man. It's crazy. And like relit this, like, you know, for me, this like park fire and like had me trying some shit that I haven't done in forever and haven't skied the park in a long time. Was just like, all right, let's go. This is fucking awesome.
Yeah.
It's like the stoke, the people, the park, man, quick ass laps. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
T-bar. So many laps that day. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I almost had, insane. It's completely invigorating, but like when the first year when P and I went, I almost short circuited out because we're used to seeing, like, as a filmer anyway, you're used to seeing like a couple things go down a day on a good day.
Mm-hmm.
Right. In the backcountry especially. But yeah,
if that goes
for street or whatever else. Yeah. You're used to seeing a couple things go down on a good day. And then you're seeing like whipping back and forth like a couple things within like a half a second or whatever, because there's like multiple sessions going and around, like, you know, 180 zones. Degree view around you. That the intake, I was like, what is going on right now? This is like too much to handle. Yeah. That's completely awesome, though.
Yeah, it was really dope. And that year, too, was such a special year. And like, I think specifically a really big year of Kimbo when we went there for Zigzag. Well, we got to go back this year if Kim will have us, which I'm sure he will, or I hope he will. This year for sure.
Yeah. Where's 2020 Super Park going down in Berman?
Yeah, Berman, what's up with that?
We'll talk about that in a couple weeks.
Sounds good.
We're going to hold you to it.
I'm trying. I sent a few emails.
It's going down in Clapham, Sweden on May
4th. Exactly. No, I did send a couple preliminary emails this past week just to try to get that ball rolling.
Hi.
Yeah, it's in Denver at Ruby Hill.
Yeah, and it's bring your own shovel.
Yeah, let us know about that, dude. That'd be really sick. I think Chris and I have a sub event we'd like to include in that too.
Yeah,
what would that be?
It's called Ideas.
Yeah,
it's called the non half pipe skiers half pipe contest. So you have to suck at skiing half pipe to be a part of it.
I love it.
Yeah.
So Duncan Adams is not allowed. He'll probably be a judge.
He can forerun.
Yeah. It's going to be judged by Nolan Willard and Kevin Malone.
Beautiful.
Yep.
Yeah, but we've had that idea for a while. So it's going to be an actual scored half pipe contest amongst the worst half pipe skiers in skiing. Yeah. Myself and Chris
Absolute
included.
Absolute Park hitting that mini pipe when we were over there in Austria filming Sunny Year.
Oh yeah.
And just like Sunny Year, we're just giving you gold here, so just take her and run. It's gonna be great. We're getting James out there.
We'll make it happen. Yeah. James will be there for sure.
James is gonna gap the whole pipe, Mount Snow X Games style.
Teddy Ross coming in to do the quad.
Yeah, Teddy Ross going for the triple butt.
Roll the burrito.
Yeah.
All right, boys. Well, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Thanks for having us. Yeah.
Hell yeah. See you around the way.
Yeah, you bet, boys.
Peace, gentlemen. Colors.
All right, so, Judge, we were talking about going up to Whitefish to meet the, like, CeeLo Ahmet Rainville crew that was up there when you got subbed out for Sean Logan, and you are about to tell a story and I cut you off on it about needing to get sleds because you were down a sled or two at the time and had a sled hole to fix in your life?
Yeah. So there have been years where I just haven't used a sled much. And then there are years where you use a sled a lot. And it's mm-hmm. tough, like in the role that I put myself in, once again, like just filling in the blanks, it's tough to, I don't know, really justify spending $10,000-$12,000 on a new snowmobile. So I, at that point, kept my 09 running for a number of years, and it was pretty cherry. It was like maybe 1,200 miles, 1,500 miles, and I like mm-hmm. really took good care of it. Mm-hmm. And just put like $2,000 into replacing a whole bunch of parts. I mean, the thing was like running as well as it could possibly run. And very first morning out, I think I made it about 2 miles outside of the trailhead, and the whole thing just blew. Like no. top end, bottom end, the whole thing just exploded. And it was just like, well,
shit.
Why don't I go fuck myself? And we we towed it out. And it was just kind of like one of those like borderline like unbelievable, like, oh, I couldn't have really just blown the engine. And we took it to a shop and they're like, oh, you're fine. I took it to another shop. They're like, your engine's blown. And we're just going like back and forth. And yeah, so we're kind of in the middle of nowhere and not a lot of resources. And it's like, well, for one, nobody was going to repair this thing in like a 2 week period. No. So like I just drove up and like the deck was stacked and it was like, you know, the cow was fat and ready for slaughter here. So needed a sled, and all I could come up with was to just go on Craigslist and buy a sled. Uh-huh. And at that point, I got myself a 2016 174 Magic School Bus, which is like the filmer mobile, right? Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, it's a great sled. And it's like, oh man, as soon as like first morning out, it's like, I should have done this years ago. Like there's a huge difference between 2009 technology and 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, yeah. 20 technology, like big old difference. So that was actually a, you know, pleasant surprise and a very worthy investment. But I also been talking to LaRon at that point because he really wanted to come out again and kind of do round two, you know, following in the footsteps of our road trip the year before. But it's a challenge, like bringing somebody out from overseas who does not have a snowmobile. It's just you can't do that. You can't put that kind of pressure on the crew to tow this extra person back and forth, and or you know, double them is the case these days. But anyway, so you know, talking to LaRon and Ahmet, who was out there with us, like, yo, I saw some crazy ad, like $5,000 for like a brand new snowmobile, and it was like that was bullshit. But you know, at that point, like he had passed that word on to me, I'd passed that word on to LaRon, and LaRon had it in his head. He's like, yeah, I'm gonna spend like $5,000 on a snowmobile, like I can do that and just figure it out. And I had a spot on my two place trailer, so I mean, like it was actually gonna happen. And of course then I got myself in the pickle and had to, you know, figure out my shit first. And then it's like, oh, LaRon, you still want to do this? Oh, by the way, like that ad that Ahmet was looking at, yeah, it had like 8,000 miles. It was a rental, like demo stuff. Like, you don't want to do that. So anyway, I ended up spending a bunch more time on Craigslist looking at other sleds and found one that was like right around $5,000 that seemed to be a reasonable deal. And it's like, well, you into this? And he's like, oh, let's just fucking do it. So I hit up this dude and like told this weird story. He's like, yeah, like my friend is flying in from Switzerland tonight. I'm picking him up at 9 o'clock. Can we like come like pay cash for this thing and like buy it from you? And so, yeah, to make a very long story short, I picked LaRon at the airport. I think his flight was delayed. We're like rushing to get to this random person's house, trying to find an ATM that'll take his card. And like, then we hit like the $500 like withdrawal limit. So he's just spending like half an hour just taking $500 at a time, like 10 rounds of it out of this ATM. It was one of those things where like I wish I'd been able to film the whole thing, but of course I'm driving him around and trying to like, you know, connect the dots and like talk to this dude who's trying to like go to sleep because now 10:30 at night, and then I get pulled over because my trailer lights are out, and then it's just like one thing after another.
Yeah.
So anyway, we finally like get to this random person's house, and LaRon hands him $5,000 in cash, and we roll off with a second sled.
Did it hold up?
It held up for the entire year remarkably well. And I think a bunch of like catastrophic, horrible things happened to the sled, unbeknownst to LaRon and everybody around him. But it held up just enough for him to put it in storage for the summer until he sold it to Thane, and then everything just collapsed all around Thane the next season. But we can get into that for romance here. But but it worked out well for Laurent.
Yeah, I mean, does it can be tricky selling things to your friends or people that you know getting into danger, especially finicky machines that break and are very expensive.
Yeah, do not buy or sell a snowmobile to or from your friends.
Because you're going to end up hating your friend.
Yep.
Yeah. Word. Parker mentioned the Waterworld segment. It was interesting to hear that he was a fan of that, because I know there are other people out there that feel
that's a love-it-hate-it thing.
Sure.
Or yeah. I wouldn't say a love-it-hate-it thing, but it's something that people either vibe to or sort of ambivalent. Because, like, it's cool, even if you're not hyped on it, I think that it's pretty cool.
There's undeniably some shots that are extremely beautiful, seeing, like, people tap in the water and it ripples out and stuff like that. It's maybe debatable how much the skiing is, like, consistently worth it throughout it, I would say. I don't know. What are your guys' takes on it, seeing it now? A little bit more perspective from it than when you guys edited it and put it in the movie.
I think it's cool. I think it's just like a fresh take on something. It's so hard to bring something new to the table. And one thing that Sammy Ortlieb has done very well over the past few years is come up with new, fresh ideas and shown skiing in a way that hasn't been seen before. And that's pretty fucking remarkable, because that's really hard to do. And so this was effectively round two, or chapter two, if you want to call it that, in Sammy's
lineage
three segments here, the trifecta. And I don't know if Frida wants to jump in at any point, but what I do know is that Sammy had run a bunch of tests. I actually have this file on my laptop. It's like Sammy, like, water test or something like that. And he built a bunch of these things with just, like, you know, plastic bags and tarps, like super, like, hand dug style the spring before, just to test it out, and actually, like, figured out that he could put GoPros in there pointed up, and it would just give a really cool and different perspective. And that's really what inspired the whole thing. Mm. And I know that those dudes worked their fucking asses off. They had one CAD operator, and otherwise, like, all the work, all the handwork, everything was just done by them. And I mean, similarly to this year's part, it was just like this massive undertaking. And even the, you know, infinite loop from Habit, you know, all these things are just, like, you know, very labor intensive.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of shoveling that is involved with that stuff.
I don't think anybody quite knew what they were getting into when they showed up at those shoots. I know, like, poor Robin Lee, I think he commented something to the effect of, like, he'd never, like, shoveled so much in, like, a 2 week period. And I mean, there's very little B roll, and that's something, because Robin is very thorough in his filming. I mean, that's his style, is to just cover all this stuff. And there's very little B roll from that shoot. And it's just cause, like, literally he was too fucking tired, and, like, just, he was either shoveling or sleeping.
Mm. Weird. Sticking around in Europe, there's some other, well, Sammy's other stuff is also very sick. We could talk about that, but I think this opener seg deserves some more love, and I'd love to hear your guys' take on that. How did this come about, this combo segment from these three dudes? Two of whom have not had a presence in the movies previously.
Kim Boberg had not. But Oliver had been in Habit.
Oh, right. He was in the park shoot.
He's a super no winner.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, he kind of ended a Habit, actually, as an ender shot. But
Kim, little throwback mention, way back in the day, and I can't even remember what year it was, but I know the Armada dudes were pushing for us to get him on the program for a few years when we were working with Armada. Mm. And it just became one of those challenging situations where, for one, we had such a stacked crew that we just didn't have any spots. And moreover, when you're talking about working with somebody who's based out of Europe, you can't do this last minute, like, oh, it snowed in Denver. Like, come on over for a couple of days. It's probably going to be good before it melts. And so things just never worked out. But But he was definitely on the radar from a number of years way back in the day.
Yeah, Kim is basically an OG. Like, he has been around for a long ass time. He's like had that real slow, like, burning fuse, like, just throughout the years doing a lot of ill shit. The way I see it, he never, like, blew up in a huge way in the U.S. necessarily. I think he's probably bigger, obviously, in the Swedish scene. He's a legend, but he had never had the defining, like, Poor Boys or Level One part or anything like that over the years. But he's always been there and, like, holding it down in a lot of ways in a lot of different ways. And, like, he has made some really rad parts with Armada over the years for sure. But I don't know. I mean, I honestly don't know exactly how all the pieces came together. I mean, so in a lot of ways, like, Parker rejoining Level One, I think was almost like a spiritual leader in a lot of ways. Hmm. Like, it was a huge return to form, I think, where people that gave this, like, signaling that, like, we're getting the gang back together, you know, type of shit. And
people want to be part of that.
Yeah. And, like, one of those people was Per Hagelund, like, Paven, and who I actually just had a conversation about this when I was hanging out with him in Sweden last week. But he's like, he had done some stuff. He had filmed for Three Bunch movies. You know, he had an introductory thing with us in 2014 for Less, and then had come back with Magnus to film in Pleasure, and then had been basically making a name for himself doing Bunch movies. And then, as you said, like, sort of picking up the camera side of things as well, and editing and, you know, visionary and directing. But he basically just summed it up to me last week, and he's like, yeah, like, I had a lot of shit that I wanted to do on skis that's never been done before, and I wanted to do it in, like, a big way. The Bunch wasn't making a movie, and I wanted to go all in on this one big season. And I think he kind of, I don't know if he roped in Oliver or Kim or how exactly that came to be, but it was a natural fit because they're all in Sweden. And they had a filmer who was Bjorn Eklund. And it all just kind of... So it was originally set up to be, what, like a two-week-long trip? Or maybe...
Yes. Actually, it was really funny. It was sort of a very last-minute thing. And I'm trying to remember exactly how it happened, where we're trying to send a camera kit over to them and, like, shipping a camera kit with insurance over there, it was just, like, cost prohibitive. It's like fucking $1,000 or something stupid like that, plus, like, taxes and import duties. Like, that's a no-go. So I think Oliver put the word out. He's like, yo, like, anybody coming from Dutor, like, back to Sweden,
even to Europe, anyone coming across the Atlantic.
Yeah. And what's her name,
Jenny
Bermanson, who's a young Swedish ripper. She I think and her dad were traveling over back to Sweden, and I was like put in touch with them, and just like on like 20 minutes notice, like, rallied to the office, grabbed these two camera packs, and just like drove to the fucking airport, parked in short-term parking, like ran in, like looking for these people. And they recognized me by just like this person looking like crazed, carrying these two camera packs, and like ran up to me and was like, all right, here's like tens of thousands of dollars in camera equipment. Here you go.
They're really doing the Lord's work without one.
They were. No, it was, I mean, awesome.
Traveling with a camera pack is not really
fun.
Super fun.
No, not at all.
And they had no skin in the game. Like,
They're just helping. Thank you, Jenny.
Yeah, shout out Jenny for making the opening segment to this movie happen.
That FS7 stayed in Sweden the entire season.
Yeah, it did.
And those guys
put it to good use.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it just started hitting. Sweden had one of the best snow years they've had in a really long time in the cities. So I think that they were, and they're just all so damn hungry. I mean, Kim ended up actually having a really gnarly injury, which is shown in the middle of that part, but kind of immediately it was way better than it seemed at first, and he kind of got back after it, but
yeah, and got the rebate on it.
He fully got the rebate, and like what those guys accomplished, I think it was supposed to be a month long trip or like 3 weeks in January, and then it kept continuing and continuing because they were just building on the momentum that they're getting.
Right.
And at the end of the season, like what they delivered, the amount of footage they delivered was obscene. It was
nuts.
Who they actually did that?
I ended up doing the edit on it. I mean, they're like Stefan did a bunch of the cut down or just organization of the footage because there was so much that was over.
It was crazy.
I did the actual cut, I guess.
Yeah, I remember those dudes sent me like just like a 3 or 4 minute just like rough cut of the stuff that they shot after the first 2 weeks in December, January, whatever it was. They're like, yeah, like this is what we got. And it's like, oh, this is going to be a cool part. Like, hell yeah, guys, you delivered. And then like shortly after that, they're like, yo, well, we want to shoot for 2 more weeks. Is that cool? And it's like, yeah, go for it. Sure. And then they ended up shooting for 2 more weeks in February. They sent me a rough cut of that, which was like another 3 or 4 minutes of like really sick content.
Like, yeah, we're getting this little dribble of...
And I was like, oh, you guys fucking killed it. This is going to be a sick part. They're like, yeah, can we keep the camera and shoot for another 2 weeks? Like, you guys can do whatever you want. Like, that's insane. But yeah, it was this very funny thing that just, like, the ball kept rolling.
Mm. I asked that question about who edited because I think the lifestyles in this segment with them dancing and vibing, like, rotational shots of the features... It ties together so nicely with the vibe of their skiing and the song. And, like, the vision they had behind shooting all that shit is extremely nice. So, like,
that's worth pointing out.
Everyone on that crew.
For sure, is that that was clearly their vision. Like, that's, you know, Friedel did an awesome job of like, you know, cutting it all down and like, putting it together. But yeah, it's really cool that it was very clearly their vision, and that's something that like came through in all the rough cuts they sent, and they had a very specific goal in mind when they were shooting all that.
Yeah, I mean, those guys are not apathetic to the editing process. They had a fully established vision. I think between Bjorn and Pabin, especially as like the visual guys there, they knew a lot of that lifestyle, like. All that stuff they were getting was tied in with like a type of music that they knew they wanted, like some basically like techno style vibe there. And it's actually made it interesting because I had talked to Pabin and those guys a bit at Kimbo Sessions that spring about the part and, you know, kind of what they had. And they showed me little snippets of like a vibe that they wanted or whatever. But when it came down to cut it, I ended up tying in. We knew that it was super strong, that it was going to be an opener, and that Parker would close the movie. But when I brought up that orbital track, like, and tied in this intro, like, to it, I had a different version, basically, that went on for quite a while with that same track. And I sent it to those guys, and Pavin was like, that ain't going to work. Like, that's not what I had in mind. And this is, like, it last, you know, in August. So it's like, shit. Gotta go. I have to do better. But, I mean, it came down to, like, yeah, it's switching up the songs there and keeping a little momentum. But basically, Pavin is like, I had the best season of my life. I want this to be represented like how it had it and, you know, how I see it in my mind, which is always hard when you're not with somebody to, like, fully capture what they have in, like, in if they're not editing the part. It's like, I can't be fully synced in with you necessarily if we're... Especially we're overseas, we're not in the same room together. But I'm pretty hyped how it came out. And dude, I think it serves those guys really well. I mean, both Pear and Kim got X Games invites the last winter based on that part alone,
pretty much. I think that was definitely one of the goals too.
Yeah. I think it paid dividends, and it's a pretty original street part for a level one movie, that's for damn sure.
For any movie, in my opinion. Yeah. It holds.
Yeah, it holds. Like, it's nasty. Yeah.
Since we're like near the intro, I'm curious. Let's talk about just like concept for this movie as a whole. Like, kind of going back to basics, moving, obviously, no narration, like switching it up from the past couple of years.
Sure.
What's driving that?
Yeah, so I mean, this
couldn't repeat the same process.
Yeah, which we actually like almost by default sort of did. Like, we had some voiceover stuff for the trailer because we were just at that point 2 years into using voiceovers to like plug in some stuff that you want to say or whatever.
Mm.
And we tried it for the trailer, and Parker was the most outspoken voice against that. Mm. He's like, fuck this shit. People in general are, you guys did that.
Mm.
Like, let's go back to the basics here. And which was a super proper valid call and valid call.
Mm-hmm.
And what we were doing at that point, we had nothing more to say. Like, I had nothing more I wanted to write for somebody to talk about.
Mm.
And, we had tried like in a pretty funky like delivery system is what I call that, like in Habit and Pleasure as well, but like that's a delivery making a delivery system to show Skeen.
Yeah,
all your at the end of the day, you're just making like
it's not like there's skinning a plot. The cat. There's no right,
exactly. Yeah. So like it's just a different these concepts are just delivery systems or a shell that you put Skeen into. So it was very much like, yeah, I mean, it was like back to the basics. Let's show we have a lot of heat here between, we just discussed with
all of it.
P. White
Let
and
it breathe.
The Swedes and everyone else in the movie. But it was back to the basics straight up. Like, that movie is it has its own vibe, but it's a very much a part for part, like stripped down ski movie just like your grandma used to make, you know?
Like, word. Like round 8, I don't even fucking know, on the whale tail in Banff.
The latest incarnation.
Yeah.
So again, it's become increasingly challenging as time goes on to find a resort to host you and to work with them to realize some kind of crazy vision. And I'd been trying for a while to recapture the whale tail from Alpine Meadows in iTrip here, just because that was one of the most trickable, fun, like best case scenario, like double hit park features that, you know, we had ever seen, and other iterations that were inspired by that never really delivered. And then another thing that I remember that I really wanted to try to do is that there were potentially trannies all over the place, or there actually were on that Alpine Meadows feature that I remember people kind of looked at them and it was like, maybe you could take off here and go to here. And it was like, nah, like this is
people are having too much fun with how you're supposed to hit it.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But it's like, man, you know, 9 years later, 8 years later, we could potentially build the same kind of thing and hit it left to right, over the top. We could hit it like a, you know, reverse hip to the proper landing. We could probably hit a, you know, take off here and then redirect there. It's like, man, what if we did this thing very intentionally to hit it like 100 different ways?
Mm.
And of course, that's all good and fine in your head. And then when you go to execute it, you know, whether or not things actually line up is a whole different story. But I will say that Ben and the crew at Alpine Meadow, or Ben and the crew at Sunshine, put together an awesome feature, and it was an awesome week. It was crazy weather window, because obviously, you know, weather is always a factor that we're battling, and I think they were like, you know, four or five or six just like unbelievably cloudless, epic days. I mean, it was like all you could ask for to end the season.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I thought you were saying the other way around, that you only got one day.
It was crazy to the point where it's like, man, like we got what we needed. Like today we're going to just hit it this way. And then now we're going to hit it this way. And
now Rob Hill is going to jump over the lip.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Fine. Yeah. And man, I'll tell you what, though, one of the design like goals of that feature was to have Johnny Durst come out and fly his POV drone, because at that point, Air Blaster had become a thing, and he had definitely established the fact that
because he shot at Super Unknown this year.
He did. Yeah. Yep, he did. And it's like, damn, like looking through the perspective of that lens, moving around in the way that he can move it. I mean, that is bringing something new to the table. And it's like, that is another tool. We're going to like just fucking unleash this thing, and it's going to be amazing. And it's like, oh, just kidding. You're in Banff National Park. I mean, it's the equivalent of trying to fly a drone in Yellowstone.
Yeah.
It's like absolute no go. And it's like, ah, oh. And then somebody like fed me the wrong information, like that there was a possible way to do it. So I got in touch with Parks Canada, and they sent me all this paperwork, and they misunderstood what I was asking. I probably spent like a week of my life like cutting through like the heaviest, thickest of red tape, thinking that at the end of the day I was going to walk away. I'm going to get this fucking permit, and Johnny's going to fly his drone. It's going to be great. And you know, it's like in reality, they're like, oh, that's what you want to do? Well, no. And like we were talking about like the possibility of like taking a drone off outside of the park and flying it in, because you could legally do that.
Yeah.
And it's
yeah.
like, oh, no, like that's not going to work because it's too far away.
Yeah.
Like, oh, well, we can get a heli and we can fly the heli from outside. As long as the helicopter does not land in the park, you're good. And it's like all these crazy things. And talking to the dudes at Sherpa Cinema, because they had been one of the few companies to fly extensively in Banff. And then trying to talk to a drone operator who had some ridiculous family connection because his father owned a business in park. And just like, it was insane. But, anyway, it was cool. It worked out. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Awesome place. To...
Very, very pretty place.
Yeah. Mm. Put it on the bucket list. It was a place that I'd never been. And man, like as far as just beautiful places to go in North America, go to Banff.
Yeah. Canadian Rockies are pretty stunning.
Mm. Keegan and Will Berman with another like running back their combo style from the opener to Habit. I would say that this segment resonates in a similar way to the Swedish segment as being pretty different. The track specifically, like
it's all on the track.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sure. Exactly. Yeah. Like, I was going to say starting with the montage of Chile with the battle on the rail, but that's only unique because of the track.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. That would be any battle with a rail with a bunch of slams. And then, but it's like this low key offbeat, like, very subtle thing going on there that like changes up what the feel is. I'm curious if they were down with that track.
I think we had to sell it on them a little bit. I think Keegan was receptive to it on round one. He was like, yeah, that's cool. Mm. And he didn't really have much to add.
Easy date.
Yeah. Chili was like, I don't think he liked it at first. And I think explaining to him, in my mind, the value of doing something different, because like it is a, you know, borderline trope at this point, like grab like a, you know, heavy mumble rap track, just throw it out. They're skiing on top of it. It's like, oh, this is cool. This is sick. Like,
yeah.
And it's why easy
don't we use
to
some
do.
Mumble rap?
Well, no, but that's what people like expect. Like that's what those dudes listen to. That's like,
well, Keegan, the year before was coming at us with like some Khaled, DJ Khaled and shit. It's like, yeah, I can't really use this dude.
But regardless, like there's like a very specific like vibe that they're skiing.
Yeah, thinking about like Chili's Less part, like that, that track is emblematic of what you're describing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like, well, that's what people expect. And because that's what people expect as a viewer, that's what we want to stay away from. Like, I know this park's going to be sick, like, but what can we do just to mix it up a little bit? And that's what we did. Music sets the stage.
Who shot that battle on the elbow to quad that opens the seg?
That was Ian Avery Leaf and Ethan Timmons.
Really?
And I think that was over 2 days. Hmm. And that was one of those things where, like, they, speaking for Chile here, I think, but, like, thought it was going to be easier. And so they just, like, kept on hanging on. Because it's like, oh, like, we're going to get this. We're going to get this. And it was just like, fuck, maybe we're not going to get this. But we're going to keep going and going and going. And that was, like... Yeah, and then another reason that I wanted to include that is just because I think that was one of the themes of this movie, was just trying to show these real moments and giving you, like, a little bit of a peek behind the curtain, if you will. And, like, you know, I let the moment where, after he stomps it, like, almost play out too long, where, like, those dudes are, like, hugging. And
no, I'm such
so
a fan
hyped,
because,
like,
I think I miss that in these movies. I think when... there's, like, so many angles, there's a tendency to overcut when it's not there. And the, like, seeing that roll for, like, 15 seconds, and he daps up, like, three different people, and he's got,
and
like
he falls
through,
over.
Yeah,
and,
he goes through, like, a whole emotional process there in that shot, and it's fucking awesome. Yeah. I'm a fan.
Cool. Glad you're picking up what we're putting down.
Yeah, for sure.
That was a good part.
Yes, for sure. A lot of hammers. And props to Ian and E-Money for, like, rolling on all of that stuff, because it's
easy to not do it.
Yeah. It seems like filming street like that, it's harder. It's easy to miss shit like that. Like, it's easy to turn your camera. It's when you're doing fucking 100 attempts and so many, you just, like, the repetition of hitting the off button and be like, oh, it's over, it's done. And then they do some emotional expression that's so vivid and you're like, oh, fuck, I missed it. Yeah. But I don't know. I'm sure they missed some shit too, but, like, they got a lot of good stuff, and yeah, that part hits. Sammy Sig, like, couple, playing off the theme of, like, his Waterworld park shoot, like, though I think the waterfall slide is, like, pretty iconic shot from this movie. Who was there for that?
Robin Lee.
Word.
Yeah.
Yeah, his Sig is...
Which was, like, filmed before or after filming for the, I don't know this sequence of events there, but for the actual water part, park part. Sammy is on a huge water tip.
Yeah, clearly.
To the point where, like...
There's another feature, too, that's all water, different one. Few, than
there's three or four. That there was even one that was cut out. Going from the water part into Sammy's part proper was, like... is there, like, too much water going on? Beavis?
There's no snow.
Yeah. Like, yeah, just, it almost got a little gratuitous where it's, like, a lot of slow motion water.
Mm.
Maybe it is too gratuitous. I don't know. But, he was on a huge water tip.
Yeah.
And water is snow. It's just in a different form.
I learned that in...
The essence of moisture.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, that's wet.
Did Robin shoot all of that segment? You guys shoot any of that?
Yeah, Robin shot a bit of it.
Yeah, you were there for a while.
Yeah, I shot some of it as well. And Robin, yeah, split. And then actually, Jeffrey Constam shot a bunch of stuff.
In Finland.
On a trip that Sammy did in Finland with Will Wesson. So that's kind of a collab film part.
Yeah.
But yeah, that part goes hard. I think it shows Sammy, like, in his, cause he's a pretty, like, he's a fucking punk rocker. Like, he is a pretty raw dude. And it's either that or, or a dub guy or whatever. But, he's got his own program going on, and what influences him and what gets him fired up. And I think that starts to touch on, like, what he's all about in terms of, like, a standalone segment, because Sammy hasn't had many of those, even though he's filmed a bunch for us the last 4 or 5 years. But he just has had, like, not many situations where all his footage is put into a part like that with a track that kind of slaps. But I don't think he was like, ah, man, like, I don't think that's his proudest segment, just because I think he just thought it was like too much random street. He wanted a lot. He had, you know, a lot more funky ideas to do in the backcountry that he couldn't do because Switzerland had an on and off winter. But it's still like
it's pretty heavy.
It's still pretty heavy for sure. Yeah,
there's a lot of combo like lines to in there. That I'm a fan of.
Yeah. He was definitely
just flexing on the tech.
Yeah, and definitely on like when those guys were filming in Finland, they were really getting after a lot of lines and follow cams and stuff.
And that's one of Jeff's specialties. He's all about
it. He's getting a lot of really cool follow cams, which kind of sets that stuff apart.
Mm-hmm. I don't have much else. I don't know. We covered a lot of stuff with those guys. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel the same way, Connor.
Yeah.
Word up. Overall impressions from the movie? Like, I don't know. How do you feel about this after making Romance? Better? Worse? The same?
I think it just sets up Romance really nicely.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it bridges the gap between the two movies prior. And like we've suggested, like a lot of these movies we've made have come in pairs. And I feel like it just really sets the stage. It takes us in the direction that we're going and that we kind of came full circle on.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of stuff in there that really, like on a rewatch, stands the test of time, you know, as it gets filtered by time or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, going into Zigzag was, I can't understate the presence of like Parker coming back and then Chris and those guys as we discussed, but how reinvigorating that was, like, at least for me personally, but certainly for everybody. Everybody. And it gave Level One this just new life there that definitely shows through in the film. Even though the film is stripped down and it was like, I think when we released it, it's like, damn, is this like, does this style of movie even like mean anything in this day and age where it's like these segments and this kind of hardcore ski action or whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. But it's good, man. Yeah. There's a lot of good stuff. So
is Parker the most iconic Level One athlete?
You could argue that personality-wise, maybe he is.
He's on the short list. Or like
the short list. In terms of like, you know, there's with everyone, there's like the there's skiing that speaks for itself, a la DeLorme or Casabon or whatever.
Even Will Wesson.
Will Wesson.
For sure.
And then there's like this bigger human presence and like impact and you know, a sphere of influence that certain people have, you know, more than others for different reasons, but he looms large, man, for sure.
Yeah. I think this comeback and hearing you guys talk about it in that way, I would say so.
Yeah.
This part huge for this movie. This movie needed that ender. It needed that in a big way. And it's there and it's damn fucking good. And I think like you could make a case for Wally, you could make a case for Will Wesson, but like the impact he made in a short time in the middle years and then coming back for this, I would say like a renaissance of Level One over the past 2 years.
No question.
Absolutely.
It's huge.
It allowed us like to, I mean, Josh said it, like it set up Romance. It set up this 20th and last project where like we're not going out with a fucking whimper. Like it set up this
it's like a prologue, dude. That's how I look at it right now. It's because like both those dudes just said, like, Romance slaps incredibly hard and his hammers from start to finish, and it needed to be that style of movie. And if you didn't have Zigzag to set that up and reintroduce a few people in that way and bring you back into like, well, this is the crew, they're still doing it, you can still make a movie like this that has all the fucking hottest action you want to see. Like, it's like a prologue to how good romance is. Subtle plug, go buy the movie.
Well said, man.
Yeah, no,
I fully agree with that.
Word up.
Yeah.
All right, well, we'll talk a lot fucking more about it tomorrow. Recording episode 20.
Hell yeah, you mean boys. Next week.
Right, right. Thanks for listening, everybody. Got a couple awesome podcasts coming at you in the next 2 weeks. Gonna have a romance part one and part two, so stay tuned for that. Go check out the events page, www.level1.ski. Find a tour stop near you. Find something on the store that you like. Support independent filmmaking. Support 20 years of Level 1. Get an awesome Christmas gift for your loved one. Do something like that. But thank you for tuning in. Go watch the movie if you didn't, and we will talk to you next week talking about romance. Cheers, everybody.